in my mind, I'm separated from everyone else, but in actuality, I'm connected to everything. There's nothing about who I am that isn't shaped by other people and places that I've been, by the food that I eat. You know, I'm literally built from the same atoms that are, you know, in rocks. You know, I'm part of that. I'm part of that whole system.
Hi, everybody. I'm excited to get to talk to you today. I have a really great interview lined up. As always with this half of, I guess, the second or third season, whatever I'm doing, if you want to stick around and hear what I have to say after the interview, wait till after the commercial break. Thanks. Talk to you then. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to At Least There's This, a show about some of the small good things in our world of hurt. I am doing this round of recordings in May of 2021. There's some moderately good things happening for some of us and some really, really bad things happening for so many people in the world right now. India is still in the midst of a COVID pandemic, the likes that we have not seen before. Colombia is starting to have some really brutal civil unrest. There's still unrest in Myanmar. And I think just a lot of people are generally bummed the fuck out. But in a world that's such a bummer as that, at least there's...
Sure.
Hi, everybody. I am with biologist, filmmaker, and owner of Day's Edge Productions, Nate Dappin. And we're going to be talking about nature today. Hi, Nate.
Hey, Alex. How's it going, man?
Pretty good. I'm really happy to be talking to you. I love talking to people like you who do this incredibly cool stuff that people like, people watch the kind of work that you make, but I don't think people often talk to the people who make that work. And so I'm really jazzed to be able to talk about it. But before we get into that, I want to talk a little bit about you. Do you think you could let me know whether you are an optimist or a pessimist and what that means to you?
It's kind of a trick question.
Yeah, gotcha. Ha.
You know, I would say I lean towards pessimism. Yeah, but I use it to motivate myself.
Okay. What does that mean to lean towards pessimism?
I think when you average things out, people make bad decisions. But I think the silver lining is that there's enough people doing good stuff to turn things around, you know? And mm-hmm. I think like, you know, I look around, especially in my industry, you know, working in the sort of nature conservation. By the way, I've got two identical twins out here who are crying, so nothing I can do about that right now.
No, not at all. Mazel tov, by the way. Oh, thanks, We've talked about it over email, but not face-to-face.
Yeah. Well, you might hear them chime into the conversation. But I think, you know, you hear lots of, in my industry, just so much doom and gloom, you know, and it feels like such an uphill battle fighting organizations and corporations and governments that have a lot of resources and sort of different kinds of pressures influencing the way they impact the world and biodiversity and sort of wild spaces. And so you hear a lot of that, and I tend to think they win most of the time, you know, but then, you know, you hear lots of these great stories of hope, and you can rally people around ideas and get them invested, and change, positive change happens all the time, every day, all over the world. And so, you know, in general, I'm a pessimist. I think it's hard to fight the uphill battle, and I think it is an uphill battle in that sense. I'm a pessimist, but I'm an optimist in that I think you get enough people catalyzed around an idea, you can do great things.
Is that something that you came to pessimist first and then started to see a few things that gave you a slightly different perspective, or did you start as more of an optimist and start to slowly mature in that feeling?
I definitely started as an optimist. I think when you're young, not that I'm not still on the younger side of things, but I'm not as young as I once was. I think a lot of people in our field are really idealistic, moving into it. Mm-hmm. We come into it with this sort of, you know, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, we're going to change the world kind of perspective. And then once you start, you know, getting into it and making media and working with people on the ground and seeing the reality of a lot of the challenges, I think it grounds you. And for some people, I think that pessimism detracts from their motivation. And for me, it just makes me feel like more fired up. Like I feel like I've got to do more. So I think it's been good for me, in terms of my work ethic and my motivation. But sometimes, you know, at the end of a big project that doesn't make the difference that you want it to, it can be disheartening.
Yeah. So how does it motivate you to do more? Is it like, I want to do a project that affects more people, or this thing that's making me feel so down, I want to cover this?
I think more means more, you know. Certainly I think I've got a better sense of what it's going to take to make certain changes that maybe I didn't quite grasp before. And I think it also means just approaching things a lot more critically, you know, like really understanding your audience and not just telling the story that you want to tell because, you know, you're an artist and you want to make something beautiful. It's like, how do I actually change things? And doing that often requires pulling in people and who have different expertise and relinquishing creative control over things. And So I think now it's more just like we can use more information to make better decisions, and it takes a lot of work to do that. It's not as simple as just telling a simple story.
Right. So let's go from here to how you got into this, right? Because you follow a path that not a lot of people in the world do. I mean, I'm sure to you it seems like everybody is a biologist who also makes film, but that's because that's the circles you run in. To me, you're the one and only. So how did you follow this trajectory?
God, what can I do to remain your one and only?
just keep talking to me.
Okay, all right, yeah. So I pursued the biology route. Undergrad, I studied biology and art, and I was also pre-med, so I thought I wanted to be a doctor, and I was an art major because they wouldn't let you use the dark room if you weren't a major. So I was like, I was already into photography, and so I ended up majoring in art as well, and that got me pretty into photography. And when I finished college, I didn't know what I wanted to do yet. I was like, am I going to go into medicine? Am I going to go into biology? I was making some money in photography, and at the time was in a relationship with an Italian woman, and so I moved to Italy. That was kind of like the only thing I knew at the time. Moved out there, spent 3 years in Italy, and then while I was out there, worked at some national parks, got a bunch of experience as a photographer, and then decided I wanted to go back to grad school. So I went to grad school to do a PhD in biology, studying evolution, genetics, that kind of stuff. And then while I was in grad school, met another dude who was also studying the same stuff, Neil, who's now my business partner. And we started working on photo projects together. And that was right when the Canon 5D Mark II came out, which was the first sort of digital SLR camera that shot really high quality video. And I think it was sort of serendipity. Yeah. You know, it was like the camera, a tool I knew how to use, shot really cool video. Neil had this grant from National Geographic, so he made this super shitty science video. It went up on National Geographic, and there weren't a lot of science films at the time, so a lot of people watched it, and it was a lot of positive reinforcement. We were like, we are awesome at this. I'm begging any listeners not to go look for those films. They're still online somewhere, but they're not good.
I will absolutely find those and link to them in the show description.
So we made a few more about my research and his research, and kind of by the time we had gotten close to finishing our PhDs, we'd made about a dozen short films. Some of them had won some film festivals, and it had been really fun. And so we decided together, like, hey, let's not pursue a traditional postdoc, and let's start a production company and try to make science films. And at first it was pretty scary, and we were sort of barely making it. Then, you know, it's like slowly started getting clients, and it started getting easier and easier to sort of make sure that our sort of basic needs were met, and our projects got bigger. And so now here we are 10 years later, and, you know, I think it's going pretty well. We've got some great projects lined up and get to travel the world and meet interesting people. So it's and of course, work on projects that we think are meaningful. So it's been a good 10 years.
So that, right, what you just ended with, the meaningful bit, is what I want to start getting into, because you came on right before we started recording. We were like, okay, I want to talk about nature, but when you talk about nature, people have certain viewpoints on it that I don't, right? You, this is you. So I want to make sure that I clarify some of that. And that also, you talked about there being a dichotomy in some people's minds between nature and man. And there also seems to be this dichotomy that you, not transgress, that's the wrong word that I'm looking for, but that you don't live by, which is between art and science, or art and academia, art and, I don't know, the dryness of reality. So when you got into meaning, like, that's where I want to go with this, because what is it that you seek when you're making something, right? What's the meaning there that you're trying to show other people that you see?
Yeah. So it depends, because it depends on the kind of project we're working on. Sometimes it's like a classroom science film that goes into high schools and science mm-hmm. teachers use it. And the idea is to teach things that are in textbooks, but also to inspire them to think that, you know, the pursuit of science and the endeavor of science and the individuals in science are people who are contributing meaningfully to a better world and to mm-hmm. a deeper understanding about what it means to live here and now. So that's like, you know, I think every project we work on, we want people who watch it to feel like, to learn something cool, to appreciate a little bit, maybe even for just a moment, a little bit more about the world we live in. And I think to try to cultivate an appreciation for how difficult it is to understand our reality. I think we're born with all these sensory tools to observe and live and survive in our world. And those tools are not built to understand the objectiveness of reality. They're built for us to survive. And so humans have not understood, we still don't, but humans have been really bad at understanding our reality for pretty much our entire evolutionary history. And it's only been very recently that I think we've started to sort of tap into the fabric of reality. And that's been through mostly done through the scientific process, I think. And so I'd like people to, you know, when they find out a cool fact, appreciate that it's not just some, you know, dude watching YouTube videos coming up with theories, but it's people who are working for their entire lives to understand some minuscule thing that is a cog in a larger sort of machine of knowledge that tells us how the universe works.
And so then that gets us back to nature, right? Mm. Because that's what we're here talking about. We're not just talking about making the films, that we're talking about this thing,
yeah.
Right? This thing that is nature that you are so in awe of, and that your job is to try to get people to see it the way you see it, in a way, you know, like you just said that I show you this thing and I want you to think how cool it is that people are working to try to understand this thing. So what is it about that thing that you, Nate, wake up every morning and go, you know, this sucks, but at least I get to experience, I don't know, your, like you said, your garden, or I get to experience the Serengeti, right? What is it about this that so awes you?
When you say this, nature.
Yeah.
I mean, so just to sort of recap what I sort of told you before the show started, you know, I don't think that there's any distinction between a wild place and a city, or between humans and dogs. You know, or humans and bacteria, we're all part of this big machine. And we've created this distinction because we've made all these barriers that make us less susceptible to things. But the reality is, in my mind at least, we're all part of nature. Every single thing that happens is nature. Your cell phone is part of nature, 100%. It is maybe a much further extension from an anthill, but it is a very sophisticated anthill created by something that is biological and all made of the same material that everything else in the universe is made of. So I think, like, that is, it's really, like, for me, like, nature is like, what is life about? Like, what's the, like, I'm awed by like life and everything are here, right? Everything around us It's just like, it is not one thing. It's the smile on my kids' faces to like watching an animal do something insane, right? So it's all kind of the same thing to me, and I draw inspiration from all those things. So yeah, I feel like very difficult to put your finger on, but it's like everything. God, that's not right. You know, it's like everything.
I mean, that's sort of the fun and the difficulty about some of these bigger, broader topics. But I love it when I have guests bring it on, right? Because it's like we're talking about, in a way, we are talking about existence, right?
That's exactly. You're like, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. Saying at least there's nature, but nature is everything. When you're talking to people, like, let's make me the straw man of this dichotomy, okay. You know, like, well, I don't live in nature. I'm a man and I drive a car, you know, when you're talking to people like that, what is it you're trying to communicate? And you're like, no, but that's nature too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that there's the practical side of things, which I think is just that we are as dependent on the resources in this world as any other living organism. We have to eat, we have to drink water, and we also need beauty in our life to live meaningfully. And I think our relationship with other living things on the planet can take a lot of different forms. And when you think that you're at the top of whatever, you know, maybe not the food chain, but the top of the life pyramid, you know, and you're looking down at everything else, I think that it's not a healthy way in which to move forward. And if most individuals in society are seeing the world that way, we're gonna mess up the things that we rely on, not just for sustenance, but also for meaning. So yeah, there's that side of things. But then I also, you know, just the meaning side of things, like, I think when you start realizing how similar we are to things, it doesn't diminish our existence. It makes everything else so much richer, you know, like, yeah. And I think, you know, the more you can get, the more, when I've seen people and when I feel inspired myself, it makes me happier, and live more meaningfully. So I'd love people to sort of draw inspiration from the same things that I do. And at the same time, I think that's a motivator to relationship with
one of the things that you can take from this relationship we have with nature isn't just the material sustenance that we get from it, but there's also meaning in the beauty of it. Right, in our similarities, in our reliance. I'm gonna throw a big one at you. What does meaning mean to you?
Yeah, it's complicated. And you know, I think there's a bunch of assumptions that all of us make that determine what that meaning is. So if you're religious, it's about, you know, your relationship with God or whatever, and you know, being able to go to heaven or, you know, maybe like a reincarnated sort of soul or something like that. But for me, it's, I don't think that any of those things aren't the assumptions that I make about the world. And so for me, it's about understanding connection, my connection to everything else. I find meaning in my connection to, you know, I'm built from the same stuff that everything else is built from. It comes from relationships that I have with my community and my environment, and it comes from feeling like I'm making the world better than it was when I got here. Those are the things. Connection, I think, is the big one. Feeling connected to other things. Not feeling like I'm, you know, a lot of people are talk about how you die alone,
you know? Right?
And I believe that, but like,
you are a pessimist.
Yeah,
so you made very clear.
Yeah, but I believe that, but like, I don't find that depressing. I think that,
really,
like, yeah, it's like in my mind I'm separated from everyone else, but in actuality I'm connected to everything. There's nothing about who I am that isn't shaped by other people and places that I've been, by the food that I eat, you know. I'm literally built from the same atoms that are, you know, in rocks. You know, I'm part of that. I'm part of that whole system.
Is your training as a scientist something that inspires that feeling, or is your training as an artist something that inspires that?
Both.
Or is it it's a convergence?
Yeah, I think there's the art science thing is a similar false dichotomy. I think it takes tremendous creativity to be a good scientist, to sort of think really critically and come up with a good question, and then to figure out, really using a lot of creativity, how you're going to test that idea. And there's, you know, there's a lot of monotony and things that feel a little bit dry in that process. But there's, you know, some of the most creative people that I've met are people who have figured out really creative solutions to solving a complicated problem. And I think, you know, if you want to be a really good artist, you're not just throwing paint on a canvas. You're thinking really critically about how can I create something meaningful. It's not just creating something beautiful, but the best artists are the ones who find metaphor in their art, who represent things that extend our understanding of the human experience. So I think that the dichotomy is a false one. They're definitely intertwined in ways that they cannot be separated.
So that connection is something that for you emerges from both.
Yeah, totally.
Trainings, but both train, there is no both, they're the same thing.
Totally. And I think, you know, once you silo the ideas and you think that art is this thing and science is that thing, if you lean more towards metaphor, I think, and you find meaning in metaphor, I think art is the kind of thing that inspires you most. But I think if you're the kind of person who finds meaning in understanding how the world works literally, I think you lean mm-hmm. a little bit more towards science. But I think you have to sort of be in both realms, because for me, when I find out something really rad about the cosmos, it kind of creates this sort of...
You want to show it.
Yeah, you want to show it. And I think when you sort of understand like a poem that sort of deepens your understanding of the human experience, I think that it also clarifies more about reality to you. So I think the end results are actually really similar.
I think I'd have to agree. In my own experience, I, as someone who is passionate about communicating science, right, as someone who wants to make art, the things that inspire me the most are perspectives that you could call scientific, though I think that's almost unnecessary. It's like deep connection. You keep coming back to this thing that's really just like getting me so jazzed, but like, the connections, the emergence of things from smaller things, that the similarities between something like a cell phone and an anthill get me so inspired and excited and connected. I feel deeply connected to nature, to existence, when I'm thinking that way. And when I'm not, then I just feel like a man, you know, walking around on concrete, and there isn't beauty to the world because I'm one thing, you know?
Yeah. When you are separate, you're exactly that. You're separate.
Right.
You know? And that's tragic.
I'd have to agree. Yeah. It is depressing. And I mean depressing in like the literal sense. Part of COVID for me, part of the struggle with COVID is being separate. You know, and I tried to do all the things they say you do. I tried to get out in nature a lot, and I did. I kept up with my friends as best as I could, but there was an incredible sense of separation I felt through all of quarantine, because there aren't really the chance meetings, the exciting, strange things that can happen. You're siloed, and you're siloed in a apartment that you see every day, and it's harder and harder to create a sense of connection. And I'm sure a lot of people did a great job of doing it. I just had a hard time.
I did too.
Feeling, yeah, that connection. You had a hard time too?
Yeah, well, it was weird, you know? COVID sucked.
Yeah.
I mean...
It certainly did.
It was a bummer. And I feel like we, you know, we were lucky. You know, we kind of live in this tight community here, and, you know, we didn't have to worry too much about work stuff. You know, I think... And it was, but even just like the little things really, were, very hard. It's hard not to like say hi to people who I knew in the community, you know, like,
right.
You know, and yeah, it was hard. I think, it was, it's weird coming out of it now. It's like, all of us have worked so hard to make COVID our new normal, you know? And it's like, it's hard to get out of those routines. I think all of us developed really bad habits that were good habits for COVID, but really bad habits for like living a healthy, normal life.
Yeah, and trying to shed some of those, like, the chrysalis that we had to put on that are really, you know, keeping our wings tethered is, I'm feeling myself again. I'm feeling like, oh, I can talk to people again. I'm excited to talk to people. And part of why I'm really excited about this conversation is that I get really excited about some of the same things you've been talking about. But all through COVID, I have not been able to pick up a science book. Or watch like a science documentary, listen to science podcasts, any of that, because it's felt like a luxury in a way, to care about relativity, right? To care about like, you know, a grand unified theory or some cool, like, I'm trying to read Neil Shubin, just like, came out with a book about the evolution of meaning, right? And I'm like, it feels like a luxury to read these cool thoughts about human existence that don't really have anything to do with the struggles of people every day. And I'm now starting to feel like I can care again about some of that stuff. Did you have any of that?
I didn't, but I get it. I mean, I felt like it wasn't just that we were hearing bad news all the time and it was hard to hear the reality. It was that also that we were getting bombarded with science all the time. You know, science has been in the news more in the last year than it ever has been in history, ever. We hear about it every single day. The new study that says this, the new study that does that, data is coming out that's demonstrating this. And it gets tiring for a long time. And I can totally see it wearing. You know, for me, it was... I've been promising myself every New Year's that I'm going to start reading fiction, you know, and I just, cause I, you know, I feel like now I got three kids and, you know, a company that's busy and I feel like I kind of haven't, like if I'm reading something, I kind of like want to double up so that it's something that contributes to whatever. I get lots of great ideas from all these great science writers who know how to phrase things in ways I've never sort of thought about them before, you know, teach a cool new fact. So I've been actually through COVID consuming more science books than like ever. I've just been crushing stuff. So actually, you know what I did? I started listening to them all on tape. And so I couldn't do any of the sports that I used to do. They closed the water here for a while, so I couldn't surf. So I started listening to books on tape while I was running. And I just have been churning through them. It's been great.
It is. It's a really good way to, I mean, I'm with you in that I have also done lots of good things for myself during COVID, but the differences are stark, right?
Sure.
Like I started taking math classes, you know, like I've done a bunch of shit that like I had not done.
But science pre-COVID. Was a hard one.
Yeah. It was science in a really popular way was a hard one for me. So I want to transition now back to talking about you and nature and meaning again, because I think, right, you've just given me that image of you listening to science books on your run. When you are in nature, right, not as Nate who owns Day's Edge, who is making these films, but Nate, you, the artist, right, the biologist, sort of, I know we said there is no separation, but like treating you as a man with less, right? You're just you, you're in nature, you're running, right? Or maybe you're out surfing. What's happening to you? Like, what are you feeling in that moment? And what are you feeling that makes you want to say, fuck yeah, I got to show people this?
Hard to know. We interviewed this guy during COVID, this... I guess he's a psychologist named Peter Kahn at University of Washington. He studies how people are related to nature.
Wow. Okay.
And and he said a lot of things that I kind of really relate with. I'm sort of stealing his ideas here, but I think, you know, people, we do a lot and we kind of have a really hard time turning off all the things in our head. And the world that we've created with social media and with work and with screens and juggling these kind of impossible schedules, they never let us turn it off. And I think that's one of the big differences, I believe, between sort of modern humans and more historic human existence, where you can kind of just do things and turn off all the crazy things that you're thinking about. You're thinking about all your responsibilities. And so I think for me, it's not just that there's two things. One, I feel like being out in places that are less developed is the way I would describe it. I wouldn't call it nature.
Right.
Because I think right here in my house, I'm in nature. But I think what I would say less developed, more wild spaces. When I say wild, just less human influence. I feel like it allows me to sort of forget about a lot of things, and my brain just sort of is as in the present as it can be. And I think that is one of the biggest things that rejuvenates me, is being in a place like that. And I think I get that from surfing, I get that from hiking, I get that from running in places where you're sort of, So there's that. And then the other side of it is, you know, when you see like, even just the little things, you know, like right now it's springtime here in Southern California, and like you see a lot of birds out. So there's house sparrows in my backyard, and they're just, and all the hummingbirds, Anna's hummingbirds just picking up, you know, like little pieces of grass that we've mowed off of our lawn and bringing it and making their nests. And the crows are coming in bothering them. And I saw the other day a Cooper's hawk came in and killed one of the sparrows. And it's just this whole world that's happening, and none of us are thinking about it ever. And when you get to see this little spectacular thing, it transports you into another existence, another world that's happening sort of outside of our own. And I also find that helps me sort of feel less self-important, and treat the things that I'm doing, you know, it's like I'm making these little films, who cares, you know, and like I'm having kids, but like everybody has kids, you know, like, you know, all these things that we just get so stressed out about doing right and doing well. And I think that it does that for me, in terms of what's happening in my mind. So those are a couple things. Oh, and then I'll tell you, if you know, the last thing I'll say is, I feel like one of the things that I always say to people about doing like pretty kind of a little bit more hardcore backpacking and spending time in the outdoors, realizing how dependent we are on things. You know, when you're out there and you're experiencing physical hardship, it reminds you how strange our existence is, and that we didn't always live so comfortably.
One of the reasons why I like doing this podcast is that I really enjoy seeing things through other people's eyes in ways that might not jump out to me. And then I also enjoy seeing some of the same things that I like that people like, maybe even in a deeper way than I do. For instance, about the first one, I did an episode a long time ago with an artist, right? Who, he talked all about this artist, Roy Lichtenstein, right? He was, you know, sort of a comic book style artist. I don't care about visual art at all. I mean, like art, like paintings, it does not touch me in the least. But talking to him about it, I get to enjoy this thing through him that it doesn't really mean anything to me, right? But now, like, I love reality. I love nature in some of the same ways that you do, right? I want to show the beauty of this thing that we're all doing together in a similar way. But you have this artist temperament that you've honed through years of both biology and art that, like, I get to enjoy it in a even deeper way through talking to you about it, right? And that's why I'm curious. That's why I'm asking you questions about, like, what is it that you're seeing that you want to show others? And you when you're talking about all the sparrows in your front lawn and the hummingbirds, it's like, ah, yeah, that's it, right? You have this attention to the nature that is everything going on right now that you're trying to share with all of us. And I find that really powerful. I find that really impactful.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm with you. I feel like what you just said, you know, I there's a lot of stuff that I'm sort of dumb to, like, you know, like wine. God, I love good tasting wine, but like, boy, do I not care about like,
not a
like
bit.
As long as it tastes good. But then you talk to somebody who like knows how it's made, and yeah, it's like, oh, I get why you're into this. That makes perfect sense. And it makes you appreciate it even more. Cause anyways, but, yeah. I mean, you know, it's interesting. I have a hard time watching documentaries, even though that's what I do.
Totally get that. Yeah. Because
I don't know why, you know, I it's not like I don't enjoy them. I enjoy them when I watch them, but I watch a ton of them. I kind of have to for all the time to find out sort of work and to, you know, find out new creative ways of doing things or, you know, all that kind of stuff. But I think, you know, I find myself watching like a lot of just drama, like drama, sci-fi, action, just like things that like kind of take me out of reality, you know, things that allow me to just live in my own mind and for the time that I'm sort of enjoying them. It's like a break from the heavy lifting. I think science documentaries, more than a lot of other genres, make you force you to kind of do some work.
They do, yeah. they make you do a lot of work. And also it's your job, you know?
Right, like, right.
When you're watching a science documentary, you have to be at work.
Right. You know, I think sometimes like about how fun it would be to make something that was just not about education or inspiration, that was more just about creating something beautiful. And, you know, maybe one day we'll try that. But I guess right now there's kind of work to be done.
There definitely is. Like, what is that work that you still feel like you have to do?
I think it's never ending, right? It's you know, you've got to convince people to care about things and to care more about each other. You've got to change bad policy. You've got to build trust. You've got to unify people from sort of polar perspectives. You've got to reduce various kinds of persecution and prejudice. I mean, there's lots of the problems that will never be solved as long as there's humans on the planet, right? But like, right. There's also always got to be people who are working and part of the community that is involved in trying to solve a lot of those problems. And I think, you know, where science meets a lot of those places is so science and nature is sort of the realms we work. I think they're just intimately tied to like global social problems. So environmental problems are social problems, right? They're political problems. Right. And you know, I can't say we've ever made anything that I feel like has made a huge impact. I hope to one day do that, where people, you know, you can measure like, oh, like people didn't do this or did this because of something we made. I think that kind of stuff is probably rare for filmmakers to achieve. But it's definitely like the goal, and we're involved in a lot of, I think we've made differences in a lot of small ways at trying to solve those problems. You know, and it can be as simple as like, you know, making science films. It can be about solving an environmental problem. It can be about convincing a government to, you know, change policy that will be better for the environment. It can be about, you know, showing that certain people in science don't all look the same. I mean, it can be all lots of different things that like, it, you know, I think every genre of documentary can do this. But I think science and nature, particularly because we're so dependent on them in our lives.
So we're starting to come towards a close now with that. And I only ever ask three questions on this show, right? Like I am not guaranteed, because sometimes I don't, because it's my show and I can do what I want. But they're the question I start with, right? Are you an optimist or a pessimist, and why? And then the other two are kind of a package deal. It's, how is your thing, big G, good, right? So like, it's good, you know, it gives you hope for reality. It makes you happy to be alive etc. And how is it small g good, right? How does it just make your life better? How does it make you smile when you wake up? I know we have covered that. We usually do by the time I get to them. But do you think you could kind of encapsulate how nature, this thing that is everything, is good?
Yeah. So nature or what I do?
I think it's, you know what? Yes.
Perfect. I mean, nature is big G good because it is everything that we know. And I think it can also be big G, well, big B bad, right? I think we can we can make our surroundings and our lives terrible. And that is making nature terrible. You know, like I think it can be wonderful, it can be inspiring, it can sustain, and it can, our behavior is nature. And we can make it terrible and horrible for each other and for other things around us and make it very, very difficult. And so, you know, at least the big G good about sort of what our industry tries to do, and not all of us do it right. And I'm sure we've made a lot of mistakes, but like, I think we're trying to make the big G good of nature even, you know, good, bigger.
Even bigger.
Even bigger.
Yeah.
And then the little g good, I mean, I've already told you about sort of why I enjoy being outdoors and why I enjoy sort of my garden, and you know, it brings me happiness, it makes me feel connected to a thing. I think, you know, I love my job, and I think the biggest reason I like it is just the community of people that I work with. I think they bring me, it's great to be able to go travel to all these places and meet really inspiring, awesome people. Those are huge perks. And I think when you're first starting, that's the thing that like you think is so important. But then after doing it for a few years, you realize that if you go on a shoot with somebody who's kind of a bummer, all that stuff doesn't really matter all that much. And so I think as I've sort of been in it just a little longer, not that I'm like super seasoned or anything like that, but after 10 years, I just feel like it's so great to be working with people that you like, that all care about the same thing, that are mission driven to making, you know, the world a better place. It makes my life, you know, so much better to be around all them. So I would say that's the little g of sort of the work.
Hell yeah. So before we get to plugs and where people can find you, we are all coming out of a global pandemic right now. Not all of us who are listening, but in America, it seems like we're rounding a corner, and I hope that continues to happen. As people get out of their place they've been in, it's hard because I want to say back into nature, but they've been in nature the whole time. But as they're starting to experience more than they've been experiencing, or be more aware of the things they've been experiencing for the past year and change, what advice do you have for how, both as a biologist and as an artist, how to look and experience the world?
Oh, I just don't think I need to tell people that. People are so stoked. I think people are all moving into it, you know, appreciating the world with completely new eyes. So much can be taken away from us, you know? And I think I would just say, I guess the advice I'd give is like, and this is for myself as well, to not forget that it can happen again real quick, not to take any of it for granted. And I think all of us next year are going to be taking it for granted. You know, I think all of us are going to be taking for granted, including myself. And I think it's important that we continually remind ourselves, like, you know, COVID was a nature science disaster, right? It was the result of interacting with wildlife, and it got spread throughout the world and not contained because of bad science messaging and poor communication between governments and people. And I think it can happen again if we're not really careful, and it will happen again if we're not really careful. But if it happens again, we can do a better job next time. So, you know, I feel like people should be vigilant and just really remember to appreciate it. Also, you know, I hope people don't forget how incredible it is that science figured out a vaccine for this in a year. And now a year after it's over, you know, 50% of the population is vaccinated. Like, that is unbelievable. So anyway, I hope people walk away with that.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Very amazing conversation. This, I know this touched me a lot. Nate, where can people find you and your work?
So our social media is not great, but our website is daysedge.com. You can see a bunch of our films there, although not like any of the broadcast stuff, but you can follow us on Instagram at daysedge, D-A-Y-S-E-D-G-E, and same place on Facebook. So
hell yeah.
Days Edge Productions. And then I think we have a Twitter handle, but I think it's also just Days Edge. I've honestly never been on our Twitter.
I'm jealous of you. Twitter is a cesspool.
Yeah.
Check out Days Edge's work. They're fantastic. They do really amazing work. And as always, guys, I'm Alex Schiffman. This podcast is At Least There's This. If you like this episode or any other, like, subscribe, do all that podcasty stuff. And we don't really advertise. So if you happen to like this, send it to a friend, someone who you think might enjoy some of the conversations I've been having with people. As always, it's my pleasure to curate for you such amazing, interesting people, and I hope to get to keep doing it. So have a great day wherever you're going, and I will talk to you later. Bye. Welcome back. Nature is a man-made concept. I mean nature in the sense of being something separate from the world of man. People get upset when they see power lines in national parks, upset when they see the coyote in their backyard. Nature is where man is not. Since nature is totally unnatural, thought from the mid-1900s that sees language, or things like language, as supreme in human thinking. Structuralists, superstructuralists, they're called. Structure's what we can think, and in that way, our thinking is always social. Language doesn't stop at the word, written or spoken, either. Included in language are our ideas. Nature is just such an idea. Able or signify the distinction between the man-made and those things outside the realm of man, the concept of nature creates that distinction by giving rise to it. Here's a perceptual metaphor. Two distinct words for blue. This isn't akin to the English blue and azure, one is just a fancier way of saying the other thing. Rather, to the Russian speaker, there are two different colors that live within what English speakers like us think of as one and the same color. Well, who's right? Is blue one color or two? What structuralist thinkers would probably say is that neither is right. There are as many colors as you have concepts for. To be clear, I'm not pointing to the absence of an exterior reality. This isn't some form of solipsism to greet the world with. For instance, to a Korean, there's a difference between your maternal and paternal grandfather, because there are different words for each, so there's a different type of relationship, whereas to an English speaker, the relationship is going to be just about the same. I diverged into European mid-century philosophy and social science, asked about nature. Said above, the idea of nature is a tool. do things, some positive in my estimation and others negative. We're able to do things with this concept because it creates distinctions. This is natural, this isn't. What are some of these things that the concept helps us do? On the positive side, it helps with things like environmental protection, conservancy, and animal rights. Though, I think there's a case to be made that the conceptual separation between man and nature to the need for these things in the first place. Separate from not nature, which we consider us, allows for both exploitative thinking, the idea of natural resources, for instance, humanizing planning choices like brutal urban environments with no trees and food deserts. Guest is a fascinating person to talk to for just this reason, and you can hear in our conversation that the both of us are wrestling with trying to overcome that piece of conceptual machinery. What's so moving is that Nate may have trouble talking about reality without this conceptual divide, but he's extremely able to communicate about it with different languages than words. As a psychologist and an artist, he's able to communicate about this thing we call nature through image and narrative. Something outside the concept. Kind of thought I've been having about the point of art at all. I've been fascinated recently by the idea of the hyper-object from philosopher and professor Tim Morton. Morton uses the term to describe objects that are so massively distributed in time and space as to